Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Good morning, 809 News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Joining us now, we have Julio Diaz, the host of Let's Go Pensacola, 4 o'clock here on News Radio tomorrow, and also the host of the Pensacola Movie Club. They watch movies. You can follow them on Facebook. This segment is brought to you by Sunday Market on Palafox. Make Sunday Market on Palafox part of your Sunday routine every Sunday in downtown Pensacola from 11:30 to 3:30. Julio, welcome back, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. And he is, by the way, if you hear voices in the background, it's okay. He's not in the middle of a brawl or a bar, but he is at an event, a convention. So I appreciate you taking time to spend with us. Disclosure day, how was it?
I'm not ruling out a brawl.
Oh, well, all right. You don't want to close off possibilities too much.
Disclosure. First of all, I want to preface, very good weekend to go to the movies. Nothing but good stuff this week. Starting off with disclosure day, this is the new Steven Spielberg film. You may have seen some trailers about this, but they've been very careful to not really give a whole lot away about this movie, and I would like to continue that trend. I don't want to give
Fair
away
enough.
A whole lot about this movie, but it is a very good, very, very, very good movie. It's I hesitate to say because he's had a lot of good films in his recent filmography, but one of Spielberg's best recent films.
Okay.
Very much a cousin to Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Oh, okay. Excellent.
I don't think it's a secret that this film is about the possibility of there being alien life outside of Earth.
Okay.
And I thought it's a very moving film. I definitely kind of got choked up at the end of it. I don't know.
Oh, nice.
I don't know if everybody will, but I certainly felt a kinship with some of the stuff at the climax of this film. Great cast all around, anchored by Emily Blunt and Josh O'Connor. Everybody's fantastic in it. Bono's daughter's a great actress. Who knew? That's not fair. She's been in some other stuff and she's been very well received, but first thing I'd seen her in, and she's fantastic in it too.
Outstanding. Well, I'll take it. An Emily Blunt movie. I'm sold. I mean, seriously, she's such a great actress.
Yeah, and if you like Spielberg you don't like Spielberg, what's wrong with you?
Right. Are you human?
Yeah.
All right. So Disclosure Day is a big winner. How about The Furious?
So this is a lot of people have looked at this as kind of the spiritual successor to the Raid films. I want to distinguish between Raid and The Raid because it's a different thing. But there's these big martial arts action films that kind of like take place in a single building under siege.
Okay.
So this is kind of a spiritual successor to that film. Very big action martial arts film. 99% right now on Rotten Tomatoes.
Is it foreign language or is it in English?
I believe it's foreign language. I know there's definitely some Asian actors in it, but I'm not 100% positive on that. The trailers have been kind of cagey about that.
Okay.
So, yeah, not 100% sure there, but, if you like action, this is the one for you.
The only reason I ask is because if it's an action movie that I got to read, then I'm kind of like fighting where my eyes should go, certainly that's and many of the best action movies ever made were, not English language films. And finally, yeah. Stop That Train.
So, complete 180 here. This is a drag comedy.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Not the big engines kind, but the women looking like men kind. Men looking like women kind, sorry.
Yeah, men dressed as women kind, yes. Some very well-known drag queens in this, and this has to do with a couple of train stewardesses who are kind of bored and get into a misadventure while doing their job on this plane. Train, not plane.
I think I said the title wrong. It's Stop That Train. Each one has an exclamation mark in the middle of it. So, okay.
Yes.
Which that kind of over the top drama is, nobody would expect that from drag queens, right?
Which could also weirdly be a title for part of Disclosure Day too. There's a big train sequence. Oh,
interesting.
In
Look
well.
At you tying it all together. How's it rated?
Good reviews on this one as well. Into the low 90s on this.
What are you going to watch next week?
Oh, gosh, you know, I knew before you asked me that, and now it's gone straight out of my mind. So I have to watch out on the Facebook group.
All right. Well, very good. I know you're at a con. I know it's, you know, you got a lot of things going on. Thanks for the time this morning, as always. Julio Diaz, he is the host of Let's Go Pensacola. You can listen to it 4 o'clock here on Saturdays. Or you can follow on Facebook, the Pensacola Movie Club, and see what they're doing, what they're watching, what they're talking about. Julio, my friend, as always, thanks for the time. We'll talk to you next Friday.
All right. Thanks,
Andrew. Oh, I think, isn't next week Toy Story 5?
That sounds correct.
So I would think that would probably be the one. Very good. All right, Julio. Thank you, sir. Have a good con. 8:14 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Why does Brother Andrew love the PCUSA, not love the Southern Baptist Convention, and why is he concerned about Elmo? Find out next in the Transgressors Memorial Service, the late service. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
Brought to you by the Pensacola Little Theater, coming to the PLT, The Cottage. It's a fast-paced, laugh-out-loud farce full of twists, June 12th through the 21st. Tickets available at PensacolaLittleTheater.com or at the box office. Still rolling accident-free right now, even delay-free. I'm not seeing anything to slow you down. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Spend your Sunday in the heart of downtown Pensacola at the Sunday Market on Palafox. Every Sunday from 11:30 to 3:30, you'll find fresh local produce, handmade goods, art, and great food from Pensacola's own makers. It's the perfect stop after church or brunch, and a great way to support the small businesses that make our community special. Make Sunday Market on Palafox part of your Sunday routine. Every Sunday, downtown Pensacola.
When you were 18, you spent your spring break in Cancun. The party was legendary, and you speak of it often, even though you don't remember half of it. The geeky kid who sat across from you in math class stayed home, practicing calculus. You made fun of her. A lot. That is, until last year, when you owed the IRS a lot of money and called the certified public accountants at Benakis & Associates. And she answered the phone. Who's laughing now? The number crunchers at Benakis & Associates live and breathe accounting and tax preparation. It's practically in their DNA. When you need to know what the heck a Form 656-PPV is, call Benakis & Associates. When you need a QuickBooks Pro advisor, call Benakis & Associates. When you need someone who practices long division for fun, call Benakis & Associates. Now in the historic district on 120 South Alkanes and online at flacpas.com. Benakis & Associates. Leave the numbers to the experts.
Delicious seafood is what you'll find at Davis Catfish House. Davis Catfish serves only the best Mississippi catfish, fresh Gulf seafood, and delicious homemade sides. Weekday specials include 2 times Tuesday, 6 free shrimp added to the 6-piece dinner. Wednesdays offer lunch basket specials. And everybody's favorite, Shrimptastic Thursday, $5 off all-you-can-eat shrimp. Serving fresh seafood daily, visit Davis Catfish House on Dogwood Drive in Milton. See you at David's.
Each Sunday at 7:30 a.m., the Bible Baptist Bookstore of Pensacola, Florida, brings you Theological Seminar with teacher Peter S. Ruckman, founder and president of the Pensacola Bible Institute. He will teach you what the Bible says about the subject, not merely what it is presumed to teach.
Tune in this Sunday at 7:30 a.m. for Theological Seminar with Dr. Peter S. Ruckman, brought to you by Bible Baptist Bookstore on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Followed by the end of the world!
You don't need panic. You need information. News Radio
92.3. Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for the Southern Baptist Convention, who just this week reaffirmed their long-standing sexism and bigotry by declaring that churches with female pastors cannot continue in fellowship with the SBC. Of course, we note our continued opposition to the term fellowship, with its clearly sexist implication that only men are capable of harmonious socializing, which is why we call our post-worship service refreshment area Othership Hall. So yes, the SBC reaffirmed the toxic masculinity that has so plagued Christianity ever since the time of the famously misogynistic Apostle Paul, who actually stated twice in his New Testament letters that men should be pastors, and even went so far as to say women ought not to preach or assume authority over men and should just be silent in church, also twice. Worse, he based his conception of gender roles on the order of creation, Adam, then Eve, and their differentiated participation in the fall from grace and subsequent expulsion from the garden. Combine this with the fact that none of Jesus' disciples were women, and you can see why people foolish enough to take the Bible seriously wind up doing what Catholics, Eastern Orthodox, conservative Presbyterians and Lutherans, Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, and even Orthodox Jews have always done, which is to reserve leadership roles in the church for men only. Well, dear Othren, this must not be. If there is anything which we stand firmly for, it is the total equality of women with men in all ways and forms, even to the point of believing that gender is merely a person-made construct. Hence our core affirmation of the holy acronym string, People of the Rainbow, and the ongoing rejection of the traditional symbols for male and female, preferring instead to use only the sacred symbol of the almighty gender non-binary, a question mark. Even our baptistries are filled with only the most ambiguous of unisex gender fluids. So whether it is the perpetuation of gender binarism, the oppression of women by men in the traditional Judeo-Christian patriarchy, or the highly regressive affirmation of the Bible as a reliable resource instead of a purely fictitious invention by foolish and primitive male writers, this move by the SBC has decidedly earned them our most sincere and definitive cancellation. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Meanwhile, there is some cause for celebration. Even within the weird, twisted, and repressive world of Christian churches, despite the horrifyingly consistent move by the Baptists, this week simultaneously witnessed one of the most beautiful and inspiring actions on the opposite end of the Christianity spectrum by the super progressive Presbyterian Church USA. Not to be confused with the Presbyterian Church of America, PCA, or the Evangelical Presbyterian Church, EPC, the PCUSA has long been much more closely aligned with our own values, moving to openly allow gay marriage or allow openly gay clergy in 2011 and affirm gay marriage in 2014. However, there was a moment of concern this week when the Sierra Blanca Presbytery submitted a proposal for this summer's General Assembly, which would require that pastors must display, quote, moral character and, quote, if engaged in any relationship of a sexual nature, be living in a monogamous one. In other words, this oddly conservative congregation intends to forbid PCUSA clergy from being in open or plural relationships. Although all 50 states still outlaw formal polygamy or technically bigamy, we sidestep the legal questions by referring to it vaguely as polyamory, or for precision, biamory, triamory, quadramory, or when necessary, sesquicentamory, if someone is in a serious sexual relationship with 150 other people. In any case, despite this very traditional effort to keep pastors from expressing their sexuality with more than one person at a time, the good news is that the leaders of the PCUSA were absolutely having none of it. Literally three different church advisory committees have now publicly criticized the proposed rule called Con 10, which would artificially limit PCUSA pastors to just one sexual partner at a time. The Advocacy Committee for Women and Gender Justice called it an attempt to, quote, regulate the private lives and relational structures of individuals in ways that risk harm rather than healing. They also said it could, quote, unintentionally reinforce systems of shame, silence, and spiritual coercion. Gaia forbid. The Advocacy Committee on LGBTQIA+ Equity said the proposal reinforces, quote, a narrow, culturally specific understanding of family that privileges, quote, a dominant cultural framework over the lived realities of communities of color and global Christians. They noted that polyamorous relationships report levels of happiness comparable to those of monogamous couples. And as we all know, if a behavior makes you happy, it definitely can't be sinful. Yet a third church entity, the Advisory Committee on Social Wellness Policy, criticized the measure and counseled the denomination to seek more research on, quote, diverse understandings of relationships. Well, encouraged by these developments, a pro-polyamory group of PCUSA activists calling themselves More Light Presbyterians even hosted a training class called Faithful Polyamory 101. Claudia Aguilar Rubalcava, the director of engagement for More Light, said this is the next big conversation mainline denominations will have. She added that the monogamy proposal targets queer communities and unjustly, quote, centers a single model of relationship as the only faithful expression of Christian life, ignoring both the breadth and biblical witness and the lived realities of many faithful people. We couldn't agree more, praise Gaia. So kudos to you, PCUSA, for embracing the newest letter of the holy acronym string so emphatically, P for polyamory. you get this week's Giant Lube of Justice. Excuse me. Loot of Justice Award for so emphatically embracing the full rainbow of fruit flavors and for reminding people that number of lovers is certainly a far more arbitrary relational boundary than gender. Even though we don't believe gender is real, we do still believe numbers are real, at least for now. But we certainly believe they shouldn't matter when it comes to love. So well done, PCUSA, and thank you for being part of the LGBTQ2SIA+P Alliance. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, we want to talk about a very serious subject, something close to our eternally bleeding hearts, the bullying of Elmo. Yes, tragically, the forces of darkness in this world have taken it upon themselves to harshly and undeservedly other, marginalize, oppress, and verbally assault our favorite little red Muppet Otherin. We say Otherin because, after all, even Elmo isn't entirely sure of their gender identity, making them a courteous or courageous hero of gender fluidity. So what did the little non-binary bundle of unconditional love do to bring this hatred upon their self? Well, they posted this 6-word tweet about the NBA Finals between the San Antonio Spurs and the New York Knicks.
Elmo hope both teams have fun,
followed by 4 basketball emojis. Now I know, at first this might not seem like anything controversial. After all, who could be upset by the sock puppet of happiness hoping that 2 competing teams will have a good time? Problem, of course, is that Elmo lives on Sesame Street, and Sesame Street is famously set in New York City, meaning that New York Knicks fans expected Elmo to be, like them, a devoted Knicks fan instead of some fence-sitting spectator who refused to root for his own hometown team. Long-suffering Knicks fans haven't seen an NBA title since 1973 and haven't even seen their team in the finals since 1999, a finals that saw the very same Spurs demolish them 4-1, the same team which has won 4 other titles since. As a result, the online ire for Elmo from his fellow New Yorkers was intense. The New York PD accused him of his account being hacked, tweeting, "Just like in Times Square, we think this Elmo is an imposter." Former New York Mayor Eric Adams simply tweeted a meme of bruh. The New York Department of Transportation threatened the honorary Sesame Street sign at 63rd and Broadway with a picture of its unveiling and the sinister caption, "Don't make us take this down, bro." Others called Elmo a coward for not picking a side, and one particularly obnoxious tweet even showed an obviously fake Elmo snorting a long line of white powder, cruelly mocking our substance-dependent other and just for a cheap laugh. Even someone who is usually the epitome of tact, diplomacy, and wisdom, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, said Elmo's tweet was Rocco behavior. For those who don't know, this reference cuts especially deep since Rocco is Elmo's friend Zoe's pet rock, whose ability to live, breathe, enjoy playdates, go to parties, and even consume the last oatmeal raisin cookie when Elmo had clearly wanted it has vexed Elmo for years. In a way, Rocco is the epitome of a trans-animate being, a rock who identifies as living, a puzzle which the imaginary pretend-alive Muppet has always struggled with, but I digress. Look, of course we would normally side with New Yorkers in anything, since they only elect the best people, and apart from San Francisco, Portland, and Boulder, Colorado, they are the strongest bastions of our religion. Nevertheless, the greater problem here is that true wokists like us never like nor really understand sports, for the simple fact that sports far too much like capitalism. There are winners and losers, in other words, inequality. Only one team can win each year while all the others lose. Triumph and failure are the essence of sport, rather than the shared dull gray warmth of egalitarian mediocrity we prefer. We also don't like the ideas of hard work and productivity. We prefer to believe in a world where everyone just does their best all the time out of the decency and goodness of their hearts without selfish rewards. Despite our affection for certain socialistic elements of sport like salary caps and better draft picks for underperforming teams, we see sport in general, and basketball in particular, as far too capitalistic. So when Elmo tells everyone to just have fun and not worry about the results, they are really just being a good little wokeling, which we love. But after the bullying, a beleaguered Elmo issued a semi-apology tweet.
Nix that last message. Elmo didn't mean to spur you on.
Yes, it was sad Elmo felt the need to retract their endorsement of friendliness and fun, but the worst part has been the deafening silence from all of Elmo's supposedly devoted friends on Sesame Street. As a champion of kindness and solidarity, Elmo could have at least hoped that Big Bird, Cookie Monster, Oscar the Grouch, or even Grover might have come to their defense while being so flagrantly fouled on the Twitterverse. Even the count only took time to show that he was numbering the days until the World Cup began, completely ignoring his suffering friend's pain. For shame, Team Sesame, for shame. You should have been more kind to your adorable little buddy. It's almost enough to make someone become a Brooklyn Nets fan. Almost. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sisterin, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
Okay, here's the scariest part of that. You know, the part about the PCUSA and the three councils and then the more light ones right. were in favor of polyamory? I didn't make any of that up. Those were actual quotes from actual committees within the PCUSA and their reaction to the anti-polyamory.
Wow.
Not like, I didn't even write any of that. It was just put, I wrote the sesquicentenary part, but the rest of it is just reporting. You can't, even I couldn't make it up that bad. John Pickens has traffic for us. John?
Brought to you by ECUA. ECUA is making service easier with the new My ECUA mobile app available to download now. Pay your bill, report service issues, alerts, and recycling tips. Still rolling accident-free right now, even delay-free. There's nothing to slow you down this morning. Good job. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Apparently the best thing I did in that whole one was the Elmo voice.
It was hilarious.
That's great. All right. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David.
Who would have known you did such a good Elmo impression?
One of my three acceptable impressions. Sure. Go ahead.
Well, Iran state media says that no final agreement has been reached with the U.S. yet, although the president has said that he's expecting a deal to be signed soon. And Andrew, SpaceX launching the largest IPO in history. The company planning to sell more than 555 million shares of the company for $135 apiece. That would put the company value at $1.7 trillion.
All right, very good, David. Thanks for the update. Oh, by the way, it's a free fishing weekend for freshwater fishing tomorrow and Sunday. And the billfish tournament is going on. Weigh-ins at 4 o'clock today and 3 to 6 tomorrow down at Plaza de Luna.
News, I'm Therese Crowley. All over but the shooting and the signing, President Trump says the Iran war is over.
They will not only not have, they will not purchase, develop in any way, any shape, in any way, shape, or form, a nuclear weapon.
But U.S. reportedly dispatched four U.S. jets for the Vice President Vance Geneva signing, and the U.S. military had to again shoot down Iran attack drones targeting commercial ships. After beautifying Washington for America 250 and the weekend White House cage fight, President Trump's celebration season scarred by a giant etching of 8647 on the National Mall.
The Department of Interior is calling this an act of deranged vandalism, with authorities not only trying to figure out who did this, but also what caused the discoloration in the grass.
Fox Alexandria Hoff. Liftoff on the NASDAQ, Elon Musk's initial public offering of SpaceX stock. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 8:31 at News Radio 92.3. We've got 80 degrees this morning. It is mostly cloudy at the moment. We'll get a look at our forecast here in just a few minutes. A 43-year-old Escambia County man is behind bars. This is after a standoff yesterday that began after he allegedly tried to run over a Florida Highway Patrol trooper. Wesley Spencer led deputies on a pursuit to his residence after an incident that happened on Michigan Avenue, then barricaded himself inside after displaying a handgun. FHP, Escambia deputies, and eventually, the SWAT team negotiated with Spencer for over an hour before eventually deploying tear gas when he came outside at about 4 p.m. Spencer was taken into custody without injury. He faces several charges, including fleeing, eluding, and aggravated assault, with more potentially pending as well. A tractor-trailer driver was injured on Thursday after a six-vehicle chain reaction crash on I-10 in Santa Rosa County. FHP says a sedan rear-ended another car near mile marker 21 at Avalon Boulevard. That triggered a pileup that caused the semi to overturn. Three other drivers also suffered minor injuries. The eastbound lanes were temporarily closed as multiple agencies responded to that incident. Milton City leaders are waiting on the results of an outside audit after the city's chief financial officer was put on paid administrative leave over bookkeeping concerns. During a city council meeting on Tuesday, Councilman Mike Cusack asking city manager Ed Spears when officials learned about those issues.
Councilman, I first became aware of some concerns and needed additional information from our auditors on or about April 29th.
And Spears says auditors from Warren Averett flagged the missing information during their annual audit process. He said staff members were assigned to help respond to those concerns, and also clarified that there is no evidence of any illegal activity, theft, or missing money. The full audit findings will be presented to the council in July. Well, with summer heat arriving, Pensacola Police PIO Mike Wood says one question that comes up every year deserves a clear answer. Yes, he says you can legally break a car window to save a dog or an animal in distress. He says too many people don't know that.
If the police department gets called and we get there and the dog or the animal is in distress, we're going to pop that window. But I want to make sure that the general public knows that they can do the same thing. If the dog is in distress, they can bust that window. But all we ask is we need you to call us and get us on the way there, or call us shortly afterwards and let us know and be there with the animal unless it needs to be taken for emergency care immediately.
Wood says that leaving an animal or a child in a hot car is a criminal offense. PPD's charged people for that before and will again. He also reminded parents that following last week's Gerhardt Drive drownings, that a missing child should be reported to police immediately. Check your own pool and any water nearby first, then call 911 without delay. Now, Florida Senator Rick Scott pushing some new legislation that would double civil financial penalties for people who enter the country illegally or refuse to leave after a removal order. The Illegal Immigration Cost Recovery Act would also increase fines for employers who knowingly hire undocumented workers. Scott says the penalties, which have existed for nearly four decades but were rarely enforced until the Trump administration, would shift the cost of immigration enforcement away from taxpayers. 8:35 at News Radio 92.3. John has our traffic on the fives.
That's right. No accidents to report to you right now. But if you're on 9 Mile Road between 29 and the I-10 entrance, both eastbound and westbound, you're seeing just some minor delays in that area. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, John. Channel 3 forecast with Marion Caldwell from Channel 3.
It's a warm and muggy start to your Friday. Skies are mostly clear as we head into the afternoon. That same pattern continues and temperatures only warm up. Highs will top out in the upper 80s and low 90s, but feeling much warmer than that when you filter in the humidity. Going into the weekend, continuing to see highs in the 90s with mostly sunny skies. Meteorologist Marion Caldwell, we're at WER First Warning Weather Forecast.
And right now, 78 degrees. We've got mostly cloudy skies. And your money now. This morning, markets are mixed at the opening bell. Right now, the Dow up about 0.5%, 51,111.13. S&P 500 is up just a bit, 6 points right now at 7,430. The NASDAQ, though, down just under 0.25% at 25,758.16. Looking at that 10-year bond rate, it's up today at 4.49% this morning. Turning to commodities, gold up $108.60 at $422.60. Silver is up $294 at $66.94. Bitcoin down about $400 this morning at $63,227.13. And, of course, oil prices, what's on everybody's mind. Looking at oil, West Texas Intermediate down $2.31 at $85.40 a barrel. Brent crude down $2.13 at $88.25 a barrel today. Gas prices, nationwide average down this morning at $4.10. The Florida statewide average also down. That's at $3.90 today. Down from 393 yesterday, but up from 1 week ago when it was 388. Looking at prices locally here. We are seeing average prices right around between 319 and 330 per gallon. Some of the cheapest fuel looks like about $3.09. You're going to find that at several stations along 9 Mile and a few others around the area as well. Now, if you're headed over 3 Mile Bridge, right across the bridge in Navarre, $3.79 in Gulf Breeze there. $3.53 along 98 headed towards Navarre. Looks like in Milton, your average price about $3.35. this morning. Taking a look at our financial headlines today. In addition to launching the largest IPO ever today, SpaceX also launched 29 Starlink satellites into orbit. Space flight Now announcer Will Robinson-Smith.
Zero, engine ignition, and liftoff. Liftoff of the Falcon 9 rocket on the Starlink 10-54 mission. Falcon 9 has cleared the tower.
The Falcon 9 rocket lifted off from Cape Canaveral shortly before 8 o'clock this morning. It is the 650th flight of a Falcon 9 to date, the 68th so far here in 2026. Well, foreign workers for Alabama-based Cadell Construction claim they were paid less than $2 an hour to build a U.S. consulate in Milan, Italy. The Italian government is confirming that an investigation into the claims of five former employees who worked to build the massive $350 million American complex after they were promised fair wages. Court records show two Cadell managers were arrested earlier this month on accusations of labor exploitation. And Visa is now working with OpenAI to let AI agents shop and purchase things on behalf of users. The company announced a new partnership with OpenAI Wednesday, allowing users to connect a Visa card to ChatGPT and get to work. Limits can be set on how much AI spends and just where it can purchase from. 8:40 right now, our next news at 9 a.m. Breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
County commissioners voting unanimously to extend County Administrator Wes Marino's contract. Commissioner Mike Kohler, who had publicly pressed Marino over the library issue at a previous meeting, voted yes and framed his support around something specific he wants to see happen.
I want a normal transition plan that we have not had in this county.
Pensacola right now with Chris and Austin. Listen weekday afternoons 4 to 7. News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
I said a hip hop, the hip hop, you don't stop. Rap, 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 rap.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big sharp enough.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. It's a chance to talk about the events of the week with a couple of friends here in studio with me. This week, we've got Josh Newby, the executive director of the Council on Aging West Florida. Just had a very successful senior chill out last week, right?
Yes, we did. Thank you.
What was the end? I know David reported the numbers earlier in the week.
Yeah, we got 308 ACs, 252 fans, and right at about $80,000 right now.
Outstanding.
All walk-up donations.
Love that. Yeah, the area lows. It's a great event every year. Yeah,
thank you.
We also have with us David Baer, who is the one of the, what is your role? I always want to say it wrong, at Baer Distributing.
I'm the CEO.
The CEO of Lewis. And
just
also,
the CEO.
Whatever.
Forgettable.
You know, used to be everything. Now, anyway, but also sits on several boards. You're on, I know you're on TDC. What other boards are you on right now? It's always changing. Put your mouth right up on the mic.
I am on the TDC. I'm on the Florida West board.
Oh, right. Okay.
I'm involved in some other.
You're not
states.
On Triumph though anymore,
not
right?
Not anymore.
Not anymore. Okay.
Actually, a year ago.
Okay. Very good. And he joins us, of course, always. Good to have you guys. So, let's start with this is going to be the biggest topic between now and November. It's going to be over and over. We're going to talk about this, the property tax referendum. You've probably heard me talking about this. I have a lot of opinions about this, but, you know, I know Josh, you and I disagree vehemently about the philosophical justification of the property tax. I think it's outrageous that you continue to have to rent your property from the government and that you have to rent it based on its value. You know, that doesn't make any sense to me. Just because you have a bigger house doesn't mean that you use more services. And just because you have unrealized gains in the value of that house doesn't mean that you have more income to pay your property taxes. You disagree. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think, as I've said many times on this network, that
this network,
you cannot,
one station, son.
You don't have a claim to the land your house sits on unless the government is willing to defend that claim. And I think that philosophically, that pretty much seals the deal for me. That yes, I am renting my land from the government. You know why? Because I expect the government to defend my claim to that land.
So the framework of ownership presupposes the government, as opposed to starting with private ownership, and we collectively engage in government to protect that pre-existing God-given right to fundamentally incompatible views of what property is, right?
I don't think they're fundamentally incompatible. I think you can have a compatibilist view wherein that, yes, your property is your property, but we're
trying to... No, but does it pre-exist government?
But we're trying to live in a society here, so we decided, hey, instead of everybody having an AR-15 to defend their home or their own private fire department to put out fires, let's collectively pool our money together via property taxes to... defend and enrich this land.
Okay, so that presupposes the collective agreement about it, but I do not agree. I think it's a silly way to do things.
Well, then I can't have an honest, you know, practical discussion with you about society.
Well, now, wait a minute. If you can't simultaneously say that my right to property depends on the government protecting it and also say that it depends on my consent to that. I would say consent is the key. It pre-exists government, and therefore... my God-given right to property, it comes first before your claim to take my property taxes based on the value of the land and the improvements.
I only tracked about half of that, but let's shift to the pragmatic which we don't have
I've been waiting to have that fight with you, by the way, and Josh is one of my dearest friends, so I love that we disagree about this. It's the practical side. I'll give you a break to breathe. David Baer, this proposal, so many people have talked about the cost side of this, right? The saving side is obvious. You know, all of us who own a homestead are going to save property tax, and that's very appealing. My whole life, I've hated property taxes. And so if you just said, Andrew, you know, you can stop paying at least a big chunk of your homestead property tax, I'm in. And then I read the details. I'm like, oh, go ahead.
I do not like property tax either, but I am adamantly opposed to this referendum. I think it's going to be very damaging to our communities. I think most citizens, not all, expect some level of service from our government.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a cost to services from our government. Those services continue to rise just like every other cost. And there's a way, there's got to be a way to fund those services. And some people talk about use taxes like a sales tax. So we're paying income tax on our income. Federal income tax. And then once I spend it, I have to pay more tax.
Right.
So I don't like to pay tax and quote unquote rent property, lease property from the government by paying property taxes. But I'm going to continue to pay taxes to the government on income that I've already paid taxes on.
Right. Income tax is also a problem for sure. I agree with you.
So, but there's a cost.
And sales tax is also a problem for that same reason, right?
Right. So you can't avoid taxes. And what is an efficient way to cover those costs that everybody expects in public safety? It's not all going to be privatized. You can't do that because they're not really looking out for the citizen at large. They're looking out for their own investors and their own, you know, shareholders. And so, so we've got to have some public services like, you know, public safety, public works, where they're cleaning up and maintaining parks.
Roads,
yeah. Sidewalks, street lighting, infrastructure. I mean, all of this stuff costs money, and there is an efficient way to do it. And right now, it's an efficient way to do it. But I think more importantly than that, I think this process is trying to take away home rule from our local communities and force these local governments to go beg in Tallahassee.
And as many times has been said by the folks, you know, particularly DeSantis, but others, is that, you know, our budget hasn't gone up. Why has your budget gone up? Well, because you're buying different things and you're dealing with different practical realities. And I love your point about how, in some sense, every tax is going to be offensive to a lot of people if you really think it through. And I agree with that. Most every form of taxation is going to cause some people some consternation. We'll come back to this in a second. John Pickens has traffic for us. John?
That's right. No accidents or delays that I'm seeing right now. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
Thanks so much, John. David, I don't think you quite were finished. But yeah, and I actually agree that you can find a reason to be against every kind of tax. And I think the real question that nobody quite phrases the right way is, what is fair taxation? What is appropriate taxation? Is it by the size of your house or the value of your property? Is it by your level of income? Is it by your individual likelihood to consume a service? Is it by your actual consumption of a service? You know, use taxes versus income taxes versus sales taxes versus property taxes versus bed taxes, all the different, you know. And if you kind of spread it around a little bit all over the place, you know, we're all kind of paying it and we all live with it and we like the result and we don't all stage a revolution, so it must not be so bad. But that's the real question, is how should we be funding government?
Right. If there was an answer, if somebody had an answer, it would be in place.
Yeah.
So,
if it were clear and palatable to everybody, we'd probably be doing it already.
Right. So we try to spread it around, like you just said, and do it. And I say we, the government.
Right.
Our government. And so I don't know what the solution is, but it has been working to help support our local governments to provide those services and infrastructure that we need and we demand as citizens,
right.
And obviously taxpayers.
And I will say this, the part of this that's so, as a philosopher, so offends me is, you know, how dare you, which I've said, how dare you have to rent your home from the government, but how dare I have to rent my commercial property from the government? How dare I have to rent my rental property from the government? Or how dare I have to continue to pay for the school board? If it's good for the county and the city, it should be good for the school board. The fact that they got rid of the school board slice but didn't offer it to us as its own separate amendment, which we should have too. Mm-hmm. You know, if people want to support the schools, we can vote for that. And if people don't want to support the cities and counties, we can vote for that. That would have been at least philosophically coherent. But what we've done now is said, well, Tallahassee has to fund the schools if you don't. So we're just going to take that one off the table and, you know, force our budget cutting measures down your throat if you pass it, of course.
Well, I mean, and David and I were discussing off air. I think what we're missing, too, is just the flagrant and craven power grab of the government's office and of his cabinet throughout this whole process. I mean,
what do you mean? This is the first time the Governor DeSantis has ever even a little bit overreached.
It's not small government. It's not conservative. It's taking away home rule. It's taking away your most direct representation and direct taxation. And it just feels like incredible overreach. And yet, sorry, but conservatives are willing to go against their philosophy and their love of home rule and close government and small government. What, to save $100 a month on your property tax bill? Is that the price for violating your local representation?
But I agree with you that, you know, this governor has not been in some ways. He's definitely not been the limited government. You know, home rule is a great example of the closest to the people is the most accountable. Mm-hmm. You have the most say in your county commission, your city council. You have some say in your state rep. You have almost no say with the governor, and because it comes down to a binary choice between this or that guy or whatever. So, yeah, no, I agree. Generally, it should always, you know, we should have the maximum amount of government should be the city council and the county commission. Tallahassee should be a small but necessary aggregate of Florida government. And then the federal government should be tiny by comparison and influence on your life both, you know, doing the things only it can do. But, I mean, we don't operate that way, you know, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And I agree with Josh about the just taking away home rule and it mm-hmm. not being the conservative value. And our governor recently said, when asked who's going to pay for these services, he is quoted by saying, tax the rich. And it just seems...
Did DeSantis say that?
He said it.
Oh, my God.
And it just seems so counterintuitive to the conservative values that we all grew up with.
Right. And I have long been sympathetic. See, people sometimes say I'm a libertarian. I certainly have libertarian lean. But I don't like the idea that some people pay almost no taxes. And some people are paid by the government, not our state government necessarily, but, well, unless you include like SNAP, you know, but also the federal government, tax refunds to people or credits to people, things like that. It's not healthy for anybody to be uninvolved in the funding of government when they have the power to direct government through their votes or through their lobbying. You know, the lobbying. Everybody should have skin in the game, so to speak. And it's just gotten so out of whack in this country where this group of people can vote to impose their will and funding mechanism on that group of people just because they have some resource to take, which is not healthy for anybody. We should all be contributing to this in some measure.
I was reading, which is my own fault, reading some of the Facebook comments on the Bob Johnson post on News Radio. And it is, you know, you've got people who...
For context, he said he would have to cut deputies if this passes, he expects. Chip Simmons has said he's not sure what will have to happen. And obviously nobody's sure. The original proposals had protections for law enforcement funding, although I thought they were thin and did not really hold up on scrutiny. But the new one does not have any such protection. There's no built-in for law enforcement. Go ahead.
And so you have people who I would guess would, in any other form of ideological warfare, defend law enforcement to
right.
the hilt,
right? Right.
The Blue Lives Matter, back the blue. And then all of a sudden, they're saving a couple $100s and they wash their hands of their support of law enforcement.
Well, and they engage in criticism of him.
Right. Well, what is Bob Johnson's salary? Well, maybe those deputies can stop with the speed traps and, you know, right. like where right. is your support of law enforcement? Again, it is a couple $100 apparently that it costs to buy conservatives' values right out from under them.
Right. And, you know, we all theoretically support law enforcement. And when law enforcement is trying to be honest with us about right. the likely loss of their service or impact to their service functionality, we don't say, oh, yeah, you're right. That's a cost I'm willing to embrace. We say, you're lying to me. Right. You're selfish. You're misleading us. I'm like, what? Yeah. It's wild.
Yeah, it's wild. Fortunately, there has been a challenge filed against this.
Right.
And so we'll see how that plays out in the courts. But,
you know, probably the best... I haven't actually read the, you know, the filing. Does it have anything to do with the labeling or do you,
cause, I have not.
Yeah. Okay.
I have not read it.
So
I just read an article about it.
What was amazing was watching the debate in Tallahassee and how the, for example, Lori Berman, you know, who's a Democrat. I mean, I don't often agree with her, but I thought most of the Democrat proposed amendments made sense. For example, you know, we've changed this a lot since it was first filed. We ought to probably change the ballot language so that it's accurate. They didn't. Like, if ever there were a case to go to the Florida Supreme Court and strike down a proposition, the fact that the ballot language is so different from the actual proposal is going to be a problem. Now, they might change the ballot language, I suppose, but, yeah, that's an issue.
Yeah, the article talked about that the language was the issue, that's what they're challenging, because it talked about protecting public safety.
Right.
And that. It never made that into the bill.
That there's no such protection. And I think the school part was a part that's a misleading. Anyway, there were several elements of that were, I think, now off. Plus, I really liked the proposal, and it came from one of the most left of all the senators. Carlos Guillermo Smith used to be in the House, and he said, let's put a 5-year sunset on it.
Right.
Then we can be forced to deal with budgets, but also have an opt out. We can see what happens. Jimmy Patronis said the same thing, and I thought that was a fine, you know, everything should have a sunset so we can see if we still like it in 5 years. And because, generally speaking, policies should only go so far and have certain objectives, and we should be able to measure the results. We've got the wrap with good friends Josh Newby and David Baer here in studio with me. Last segment, it always goes by so quickly. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. No accidents or anything else to report to you. Traffic is flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Thanks so much, John. All right, I'm going to give you guys a quick vote.
Great.
You want to talk about dealing with the younger... Well, you're both bosses.
We are.
You're both in the, you know, the cool guy sense of it, but also in the, you know, you oversee employees.
Right.
You want to talk about young workers and their mental health days, or you want to talk about vacation rentals out on Pensacola Beach?
Oh, I'd rather talk about vacation.
All right, vacation rentals. All right.
Do that.
So I thought it was really interesting in the SRIA meeting, the point was brought up that the vacation rentals on the beach are already in violation of their homeowner leases because they are public nuisances and they are operating outside of the bounds of what they agree to as residential leaseholders. And that's an avenue to pursue restrictions against them that already there's apparently one case that somebody won. And one of the new board members, the District 4 representative, I forget his name, I just can't remember it right now, but he said, look, we need to enforce our leases. And if we just enforce the leases, we'd get rid of a lot of the problems that people complain about.
David.
You picked this, David.
Yeah. All right. Well, I haven't seen those challenges.
Okay.
And I haven't actually read anything about that. Because I've been involved with tourism for the last 15, 20 years, I don't know what they're in violation of the lease is.
It's the public nuisance element was the primary part. It might also be the, you know, operating a business in a residential area, I think, is a part of it too.
So how do you define what a nuisance is? Is that defined in the lease, or is it someone's opinion of what a nuisance is?
That's a fair question.
Are there like decibel levels that sound right. has to be? I mean, honestly.
Well, and you know, what people are generally pushing for is we need to have names of owners, contact phone numbers. The sheriff's department is being called and it's very hard for them to figure out what to do. And I certainly sympathize with the people who live out on the neighborhoods out there. They were not expecting to live with, you know, 8 party houses on their block.
Right.
That's not what they bargained for when they bought their homes or when they agreed to the lease or whatever. And, Yeah. But I agree with you, David, that, hey, there's some private property rights involved and the people using their property. And it's certainly a revenue stream, right?
There's your private property. They can do what they want.
I am not an unlimited private property rights guy. I am a some private property. I am a many but not all. Yeah.
Well, guess what? Nobody owns that land out there. The county owns it. It's all leased.
And that's why the lease argument's interesting.
I am a leaseholder at Pensacola Beach. I built a house. It actually can sleep about 14 people because I have a lot of beds in it. I do not rent the house out, but I have a lot of people stay there.
Right.
You know, I have my kids go out there with their friends and they're swimming. I've got a pool in the backyard. I'm on the sound side in a cul-de-sac. And, you know, we've made friends with our neighbors. Our neighbors have kids and their friends. And everybody seems to get along. We're all respectful of each other. You know, I don't know what the nuisance issue is. If it's parking along the street,
Certainly an issue.
Yeah, there's no other parking. But if you had a party at your house and they're all there for dinner and leave, they're parking in the street because your driveway, right. You know, you only have a postage stamp size leased property. And right. So where are they going to park? Is that the nuisance? You know, I don't know. I'm in favor of tourism. I'm in favor of growing our community by attracting people here because maybe they want to move and move their businesses and hire people and spend money in our communities, support our own businesses already here. And I think tourism helps do that. That's sort of a catalyst. And I think to shut it down is a problem, but they should enforce these. There's a lot of things in there.
David Baer, Josh Newby, thanks, guys.
Local news every hour and breaking news when it